Hi, this is Justine Toe, and you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Well, today we're talking about food. Of course, it's crucial to life, but the way that we eat goes beyond mere survival. I've got a friend who went to a fancy restaurant recently, and she had a degustation menu and walked out with a bill for $800, actually, because they, of course, had the matching wines to go along with the course. So obviously, this tells us that the way that we eat goes beyond mere survival. And if all the cooking shows on TV tell us anything about our relationship with food, it's that we love it. We love it so much that we are happy to labour over it. I think it's really edible art and one of the key ways that we celebrate the good life. Well, I've got Simon Smart here with me, and you've written an article on this theme, Simon, and you're interested in the way that eating, one of our most physical experiences, also has a spiritual dimension as well. And how did you first get interested in this topic?
Probably through my wife. She's a bit of a foodie, and by getting married to her, I realised how ignorant I was about food, and she's really opened up my eyes to this. And she's not only a great cook, but she appreciates really good food and fine food.
Well, we live in the age of the celebrity chef, and shows, of course, like MasterChef and My Kitchen Rules show the delight that we take in preparing and enjoying fine foods. Now, I can be a bit of a cynic when it comes to these sorts of matters. Do you think that these kinds of shows celebrate, you know, a spiritual aspect of food, or are they more about middle-class indulgence, you know, spending $800 on really, really fancy food?
It could be that this is just a sign of the self-indulgent West, using food as a distraction for ourselves because we lack deeper sources of satisfaction. That's one take on it. But more positively, it could represent a growing sort of appreciation for the aesthetic pleasures of life to which eating can introduce us. So I recently interviewed a chef from one of Sydney's top restaurants and talked to him about some of the artistic elements of this area of cooking.
In my line of work and the restaurants I've worked in, I get to use some really amazing produce, and I really enjoy being a part of a team to create special food or food that we hope that people will love. Cooks are traditionally they're tradespeople, and it's a craft, and it's a trade, it's a manual labour kind of a job. But then there is an aspect to it which is very dependent on a person's aesthetic, and there's elements of beauty and grace and tastefulness and intelligence.
When you think about what you're trying to create for people on your best, one of your best nights, what would you like people to come away with?
Happiness, great satisfaction and pleasure, and I suppose a whole experience not just connected with the actual food that you're eating, but the people that are serving it to you and talking with you, and the way the food may also remind you of something that made you happy or it's familiar. So happiness, I suppose, is the end.
Now, when we're driving up the coast, we might pull into Macca's, and it's kind of fuel for what we're doing. But the sort of dining, fine dining that you're talking about, it doesn't have to be the best of that either, but just that element of feasting together. Would you agree that that has some indication that we are animals, but we're more than that?
Well, I suppose in the reference being that food isn't fuel, so absolutely. I don't know that sense of, I would hope in our food, the happiness that we would want people to have and satisfaction, also the sense of memories are invoked often with food, and that's not really something that you would imagine and goes with the food as fuel kind of a picture. So yeah, I'd have to say that it's bigger than just the chemistry of swallowing something that fuels your body.
Okay, so it's Sunday night, fridge has got a few things left there. What are you going to throw together typically?
At my house, it's probably the two-day-old sourdough bread and the half an avocado with some sea salt and black pepper on top of it.
Sounds pretty good, Alex Woolley. Thanks for talking with us.
No problem.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity.
Well, that was Alex Woolley talking about his love of food and the dedication that he brings to his art. Now, Simon, let's talk about your article. In your article, you distinguish between feeding and feasting. Can you tell us the difference between the two?
Yeah, well, we all feed. Like all of us are animals. We need food as a fuel, I guess, for our survival. So there's certainly that aspect to it. And sometimes when we sort of pull the car in on the coast trip, you know, and into McDonald's and just pile into the, you know, the Big Macs and whatever, it has more of that type of feel to it.
Desperation.
It's desperation. But then there's eating and dining and feasting. I think that these are human customs and traditions that involve social interactions. They incorporate at their best. They can incorporate grace and generosity and art, beauty, taste, hospitality. So eating, in a sense, can at least be leading us towards something that's a little bit more than just the physical. There's something perhaps even transcendent in all of this.
Yes, okay. So there's this sense that though eating is physical and it really, you know, reminds us that we are physical beings who need food to get by, there's also perhaps a spiritual element to it. Very interestingly, you've written that eating can tell us much about what it means to be human. Now, why do you think this is important to recognise?
Well, I was reading a book by Leon Cass, who wrote a book called The Hungry Soul. And in that, he says that eating reveals something about our innermost desires, appetites, longings, and shedding light on what is universally, permanently, and profoundly true about the human animal, and really its deepest hungerings. Now, he sets this against this sort of scientific paradigm of the world, which where there's an emphasis on the materialist account of reality. But what he's saying is that it can't quite match with our experience. So when people just want to talk about us as only physical beings, he's saying eating gives us a hint that that can't be true. There's more to it than that. You can imagine this situation, Justine, for a moment. A dinner party. Like, you've got a whole lot of people around a dinner table, old friends. Now, as they go about this process, there would be a scientific way of describing it, of what transpires. So the biochemists, the anatomists, the physiologists, even the neuroscientists could have something to say there and accurately describe things like chemical processes in various parts of the body and the brain and so on in all their complexity and detail. But it wouldn't come close, would it, to telling you really what's going on. We can imagine one guest who can't quite get rid of that sort of acidic feeling in his stomach as he tries to forget the way his business is going down the tubes. Another person's sort of proud of her success, and she's as proud as anyone as she brings her Grange to the table in this sort of seeming great gesture. And then you've got the host there who's all smiles and he's sort of great love for his wife, and he glances across the table and sees her. And then she's looking around, feeling a bit guilty of that late arrival home from work recently. There's a whole lot of things that can be going on in this sort of situation. Someone else, you know, takes a mouthful of their favourite dessert and they're cast back in memory to their childhood at their grandparents' place, this sort of thing. The point being, there's a whole lot more happening than only physical things.
Yeah, so you're saying that you're looking at the poverty, I suppose, of just a strictly scientific or materialist account of what's going on, because our human experience is so complex and can't be reduced to that particular language.
People don't want to be reduced to that. They know that they have this deep sense that there's a lot more going on. They know there's also the biology of what they're doing there, right? And even their emotions, people can still recognise that there might be some sort of chemical aspect to this. Of course there is, but they also have a sense that it's more than that. There's something more happening here. It's because we think we're more than just material beings.
But this whole understanding of human life as a material entity, it actually persists. I mean, you've written that in the Australian Book of Atheism, that one writer states that science has determined, this is a quote by the way, science has determined that living bodies are animated by nothing more than all the complex living processes working within them, you know, which in some ways paints the human as like a bag of chemicals and reactions, etc.
Science has done nothing of the sort, by the way.
Okay, I have to take your word from that. I'm not a scientist. But just going on. So in the realm of food, this would mean that our tastes that find something absolutely incredible must be a lucky combination of flavours that our, you know, chemicals react to well. How can you be sure that this isn't what's going on?
It could be. It could be true that we are just physical beings, and we have to face up to that. That's a possibility. What I'm saying is that I have a deep sense, and I suspect most people do, that's not the case, that there's more going on. As we drink that cup of coffee, maybe that's what it is. It's just a combination of lucky coincidences that have brought us to this amazing taste and the, you know, whatever it is we might. Yeah, all of those sorts of things. I just can't believe that's true. Now, she said in that quote that science has proven this. Well, of course it hasn't. We're moving into the area of philosophy once you step into that sort of territory, and it is a judgment that you have to make. It's a sort of an existential problem there when you start to think of the material body and what might be beyond it. Science hasn't proven that it's only material because it's talking about different categories. I mean, I can't prove that it's more than material, but I do have a deep sense that it is that. When I hear people like A.C. Grayling, the famous atheist, talking about the hard problem of conscience that's yet to be solved, I'll say it. It's a hard problem, because where does conscience come from if we are only physical beings? And he says it will be eventually solved. He's confident in that, but I think he's being a bit optimistic. Leon Cass suggests that there's a huge gap between what he calls the ethically sterile life or ethically sterile nature studied by science and the morally freighted, passionate life that we live as humans. That's what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, so science can't fully explain the way that we live our lives. Couldn't it also be true that people, especially those who believe in a God, you know, could it be true that they also overlay everything with meaning and significance that might not actually be there?
Maybe. And it also could be true that, and some believers might accuse me of this, that I'm sort of drawing a bit of a long bow here between eating and, you know, what it is to be human.
Life and existence.
Yeah. I think if we think about it long enough, though, we'll see some of these connections. And that's a usual criticism that you've pointed out. And it usually says believers need God in order to believe God, that type of thing. You sort of, they need something so they believe in it. But the reverse applies as well. We've talked about this before. If I don't want to believe in God, I might be attracted to all the things that tell me there isn't a God, because it gets in the way of me living my life in the way that I want to live it.
The Center for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
When savouring a good meal, you know, some people will enjoy the combination of tastes and flavours, is what you've been talking about. But, you know, they may not necessarily find themselves considering those, you know, all these transcendent aspects of eating and feasting that you're talking about. It may not lead them outside of themselves. You know, this is a possibility, right?
It is. And it's true. I don't sit around every time I eat something, even something really nice, and think about how the transcendent aspects of life, but I do sometimes. And I think when you stop to think about this, it sort of leads you in this direction. So yeah, it could be that. At its best, I would say the practice of hospitality helps us, this is a good example, it helps us share our lives with each other. There's a communal aspect to it. We sit up at a table and we look at each other and we talk. You know, in our family, we try to sort of say that, you know, we want to sit around and talk. We don't want to be, you know, on our iPad or on other things or thinking about other stuff. There's a social part to that. Jesus, of course, emphasized this sort of radical hospitality at the Last Supper, which I think tells us a lot about something of what it is to be human. He linked it with the practice of eating. He broke bread. He told his disciples, "This is my body broken for you." He did the same with the wine, "My blood poured out for you."
Like, so far we've been talking about food and what food can reveal about what it means to be human. But, you know, what other human experiences might this apply to?
Well, I think that's a good point, Justine. Food here is really just one example of things that can tell us we're more than just physical beings. I think there are lots of others. I would say things like the appreciation of beauty, of love, of music, and, you know, wonder, of sacrifice, of community, of being other-centeredness. All of these things are pointers. They're big hints. They take us in a direction that, yes, we're physical. Yes, we are animal in that sense. We're physical beings. We want to affirm that. But we're also more than that. The biblical worldview, the Christian worldview, would tell us there's a lot more to us than just the physical. And partly that's why we regard every human being as so valuable.
It's a really fascinating topic, and I think that for a long time we've had this idea that in order to encounter God, you've got to go sit in a mountaintop somewhere. But, you know, what we've been talking about today shows that God meets us in the everyday, and that's such a wonderful opportunity. So I hope that, you know, the next time you sit down to a good meal, that you might think about some of these transcendent aspects of eating and possibly encounter the God that has created all of them.
And I'll be trying to do that next time as well. And I'll try to do better with my spaghetti bolognese also.
For more Christian perspective on contemporary life, publicchristianity.org.
Good luck, Simon, with that spaghetti bolognese. And next time on Life and Faith, we'll be thinking about Anzac Day and perhaps the spiritual significance that it holds for us today.